Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Confessions of a Debut Novelist with me, your host, Chloe Timms. This week, I'm talking to Senta Rich about her commercial novel, Hotel 21. Senta began her career as an advertising copywriter, also writing radio plays and articles for magazines. She currently writes for TV shows in Ireland and the UK, including drama and animation for RTE, BBC and Nickelodeon, as well as international streaming services. In this episode, we discuss the differences between writing a screenplay and a novel, why a first-person voice was so appealing to her, and creating hooks in your story. But first, here's Senta with an excerpt from Hotel 21.
I have a first-day rule. Any sign of trouble, even a whiff of a problem, and I walk. In Hotel 13, I was gone before my first shift even started. I told my supervisor my mother had died and I had to go back to Scotland. I've never even been to Scotland, but I needed to be going far enough away that they didn't expect me to come back. It wasn't the hotel, or the way it was run, or even the other staff. The problem was the hotel had had someone like me in their midst before. I don't get nervous on first days. I used to, but I've had so many now I've had to keep a record so I don't forget. This is my 21st first day working as a hotel cleaner. So it's a significant milestone and calls for celebration, although a very private one. The flutters in my tummy are not the nerves normally associated with starting a new job. Instead, they're the flutters of excitement to get in and get going. Just give me the cleaning trolley, point me in the right direction, and I will do the best job in the world cleaning your hotel. My only hope is that I'm left alone after day one. Most establishments buddy you up for a few days as part of your induction to ensure you fully understand how they like things done in their hotel, although there really isn't much difference between one five-star and another, or even one hotel and another, whatever the star rating. The only thing that varies is the level of cleaning finish to the rooms. You better make sure you can bounce a coin on a newly made bed in a five-star. Usually my buddy-up person sees I know what I'm doing and quickly leaves me to my own devices. It's an inconvenience to have someone follow you around all day, watching everything you do, as it means more work and often a longer day. I hate being asked to do it. Having someone looking over my shoulder disrupts my entire routine. The times I have had to supervise a new person, at the end of their first day, whether they're able or not, I tell management they're ready to go it alone. Sometimes they cope with the workload, sometimes they don't. But there are plenty more hotel cleaning jobs, so I don't feel guilty, or at least I try not to if they're fired. My plan today is simple. Prove myself quickly so I'm let loose tomorrow. Oh, and most important of all, make sure everyone likes me.
Hi, Senta. Welcome to the podcast. I'm really excited to have you on me today to discuss your debut novel, Hotel 21.
Hello, Chloe. Nice to meet you. Thanks for having me on.
So can you start by telling us what Hotel 21 is about?
Yes, it is about a young woman called Noelle, who is a hotel cleaner, but also a kleptomaniac. But she doesn't take expensive things from hotel rooms. She only takes small and insignificant things that she hopes no one will notice are missing.
And then she jumps from hotel to hotel, avoiding being caught until we pick her up on her 21st first day as the hotel cleaner, where she's teamed up with a group of diverse, strong women. And she sort of, they wake her up, challenge her, electrify her even, and make her think about the nomadic, lonely, isolated life that she's been leading, and maybe there is another way to live her life. But the question is, will she have the courage to do that?
Yeah, it's, to me, it's such a, or it becomes such a novel of a friendship and almost kind of like a found family type of situation. And I love that element to it. But I would love you to tell us a little bit more about Noelle, your leading lady. What was your kind of starting point for creating her?
Okay, so I wasn't planning on writing a novel, Chloe. I never was, because I'm a screenwriter. That's always my go-to. I love reading loads, but I always thought I'm just a screenwriter, and that's where I'm happiest. But then I was staying in this small hotel in Lisbon in 2019, and I accidentally annoyed the hotel cleaner when I didn't leave my room until after lunch, and she was standing outside with her trolley, kind of looking a bit cross, and I felt really bad. When I came back later that evening, my hairbrush was missing. Now, I don't think the hotel cleaner took it now, but at the time, I was convinced in my writer head that she'd taken it as like a revenge lift to get back at me, you know. And I started thinking, I was immediately thrilled, really excited about this woman who took my hairbrush. And I was like, why does she do it? Does she do this a lot? Does she only take hairbrushes, or does she just take small things no one will notice are missing, or at least won't phone up the manager and complain about? And it was going around inside my head for a couple of days, and I really was getting excited about this character, this woman. And I was thinking about TV and screenplays and things. And then I thought to myself, you know, she had some element of control over me that day. And maybe it's because she wanted to get some control back in her own life. And when I had that idea, it was 2 days later, I sat down and wrote the first 4,000 words of Hotel 21 as a book. And I just read this little Japanese novel, and there was a snippet of time in somebody's life, and I thought, maybe I can write it like that, and I'll just do a small book, because I really wanted to be her. I really thought, I just want to speak like her. I want to go into the hotel rooms and rummage around like she does. And I just want to experience this. And all I knew was that she was going to start this job, and it was her 21st one. And that at this hotel, she would meet somebody who would put a spanner in the works for her routine. And and this would be her chance for change. And would she take it? That's all I knew when I started.
So why a novel then? You said you had no intention of writing a novel when you sat down and wrote those 4,000 words. What was it to you that was calling out for it to be a novel and not like a screenplay or something?
Yeah, well, like I said, I think, to be honest, trying to find the screenplay story in that, or TV pilot, probably wasn't landing quickly enough. And then I read this short Japanese book and literally picked up my notepad immediately afterwards. I just thought, I could just be her and write a short novel. And maybe if it's short, you know, it won't bore anyone. So, and I think it really was this idea of being her and being her voice. I really wanted to do that. Because the minute you start planning a screenplay, you have an idea and you're really like, you know, you want to get writing, but you have to plan a lot more with screenplays. And the minute it's very hard to write a screenplay or a TV pilot. And the minute you do that, you have a lot of questions you have to ask, and you have to work out how you're going to show this character on screen. Where do you start? How do you get the pace going? How do you bring in the other characters? And once you start doing that, once you start thinking about that, there is an element of losing sense of the character for a while. And that's okay normally, because you have to work the story to fit the character. And sometimes there's a lot of juggling, shifting around that goes on. And suddenly, if it's TV pilot, you go, well, actually, I think my pilot is actually episode 2, and episode 1 that I've just painstakingly written for 6 months is actually we don't need it, or it's just a little glimmer at the beginning or something. So it can get very, you know, you really have so many elements to think about with a screenplay or a TV pilot, so many. But when I sat down to write this, it was just such a singular voice. And the best thing about it wasn't a screenplay. So I just felt really liberating, really liberated. I mean, that I could just be first person and I could go anywhere I wanted, tell the story however I wanted. I could have a long chapter, short chapter, you know, but I was aiming for 45,000 words. My first draft was 65,000. When I sent it out to the agent, before she picked it up, she said to me, the first thing you've got to do is add 20,000 words. And I went, really? You want to read another 20,000 words? This is what I was thinking. I was delighted because I thought, well, you know, I haven't bored her, so maybe I can write a bit more, you know, because it was a new form of writing. And I knew what I was writing wasn't, you know, I like first person novels, but I wasn't really basing it on anything that I'd ever read. Mm. I was just kind of going for it, really, because I wanted to be that voice.
I'll touch on the kind of differences between what you write in a bit, but I just wondered as well whether this has been your first ever attempt at writing a novel.
Yes. I once wrote a short story years and years ago, and it was terrible, and it read like a screenplay anyway. Yeah, it's never been on my radar, but the first person definitely suits me, because what I didn't want to do as a writer with third person novels, beautifully written descriptions, and they're just stunning, and I just used to think, I'm just such a screenwriter, I'm just going to be like, the coast is long and cold, you know, I'm not going to write beautiful flowery language, you see, just not really. I mean, I might a bit, but you just have to write in screenwriting, you know, you want to conjure an image in the reader's mind, but quite quickly. You know, you wouldn't spend, you don't put paragraphs of description in screenplays, but you still got to get the same effect, you know, from the reader, if that makes sense. Mm. Yeah.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
So would you say that you're, I mean, I guess it's maybe hard to say because this is your first novel and I know you're writing a new one now, but would you say that your ideas for your novels and your screenplays come from different places? Because they seem to be, just from, I guess, the technical level, quite a different process for you as a writer. So do your ideas for these different projects come from different places?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I'm just trying to think of the last TV pilot I wrote. So I have a screenwriting partner. And the last pilot that I wrote with him, we had a story weekend where we had ideas about things that we wanted to do. And we mixed it all up and we basically decided this was the story, and we had a story, this had legs, this was how it was going to work. And we boarded the pilot, so we put up on a big board what's going to happen, how it's going to happen, themes, and then we're talking about it, and then we go off and we write an outline, then we write scene by scene, and we're constantly talking, and you know, and all that kind of thing. So that was an idea that we both wanted to write, like a psychological thriller. And that came from working with somebody. And with the book, as I said, the idea came from this, my hairbrush going missing, and this woman, I became obsessed with this woman, and or the idea of this woman that, you know, had obviously made up in my head, but and just wanting to be her voice. And when I kept thinking, I remember I was thinking about TV and I was thinking, I can't have, you know, you don't do voiceover. Mm. Unless you're like, I don't know, James Cameron or someone, you know, it just wasn't, I would have had to have found a way to tell that story by not being inside her head. And maybe I was thinking, well, I'll write this and then the TV series or the film will be clearer. It's now been optioned for TV and film. But that will be an adaptation of the book. You know, they want to do a streaming series, 10, 12 eps for each series. That will, and they'll have a showrunner and it will be their vision. So it's not going to be exactly the book. So I'll see.
So your initial starting point was getting into Noelle's head. And of course, as we know, she's a kleptomaniac. How conscious were you that you had to give what she does a real kind of backstory and a believable and authentic kind of psychological reason for her behavior? I know you've got a background in psychology yourself, but how conscious were you that you had to kind of build this believable backstory for her?
Very. I mean, the reason I wanted to tell the story was because I had the big why. Why would somebody do this? There's obviously reasons for her doing that. And the first port of call was this idea of the dopamine fix. So we all need dopamine. Where do we get it from? Daily. And I was thinking about that, kleptomania. But I was also like, well, she's got a different type of kleptomania. It's something she has made herself in order to deal with life, whatever that is at that point. And it was also a chance for me to go back to where I grew up. It was a chance for me, which I've never really done before, to mine my inner world, you know, past and history and experiences and everything, and just bring it all up. Was, you know, stuff would just appear and I'd go, oh, yeah. So everything in the book, you could pick any page and pick a paragraph, I think, and I could say, well, that idea came from this. The reason that person is in there is because I had this experience when I was 12, you know, this kind of thing. So it's very much, I really enjoyed that part of it, not knowing what might come up next.
So one thing I really loved about this novel was Noelle's voice. I mean, I know that was what attracted you to writing her story and being in her head for so long, and she's got a real, I'd say, a slightly spiky narrative voice, but also there's lots of good humor in it as well. How did you go about getting her voice right, or was it something that just kind of came to you as you started writing?
Yeah, I mean, it came to me from page one. I just was I mean, you say she's spiky, what do you mean by that? Because I think I know what you're talking about, but can you explain what you mean?
Particularly because she can morph into whoever she needs to be for that particular hotel. And it's a case of For me, she seemed quite kind of quick to judge people in whatever setting she's in, and quick to switch her personality. So she's got a slightly, slightly spiky in the way that she observes others.
Yeah. Okay. So you think she's quite, you know, cut and dry? You mean?
I think particularly towards the beginning. I mean, obviously, as we get to know her and we learn, you know, her reasons why and, you know, what's behind her behaviour and her attitude. But yeah. To begin with, yeah, slightly spiky.
Yeah. No, I really think that's good, because I think in the beginning of the book, Noelle is completely in charge. She does this all the time. Next hotel, I'm going to do this, going to do that. It's going to work. I'm going to try and stay for more than a month here. But she seems to be, or believes, that she has everything under control and she's totally in charge, right? And I think that's what we get from her, is slightly her confidence, her swagger. Yeah. I'm going to do that. But then it doesn't. But we also know from Hotel 20 that she's waning a bit. She's starting to realize this probably isn't a sustainable way to live. And I think she, once we see her challenged and she starts to, and how it unravels her and how she's suddenly a little bit in no man's land, you know, we start to see finally kind of the real Noelle, who's been buried for so long because she just lives behind her personas. So it's not always which Noelle is she going to be now, it's who is she really. Mm. You know, it's also a story of identity.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting to see her transform, particularly when at the start she can be whoever the situation requires her to be, but then later, like you say, that slips and she finds that harder and harder to do. And of course her personality and the way she behaves changes from hotel to hotel. And I wondered whether you had to, I don't know, go and stay at 5 different hotels to experience them. What kind of research did you have to do to kind of make the hotels different and to make them feel like real places that Noelle's worked?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I'm 52 years old. I've stayed in a few hotels and all of them are just drawn from memory. Very much so. So a countryside hotel, a 3-star. I've never been to Jersey, but I did some research on that. How you get there, where would she physically stay if she was there? It would have to be a hostel. She wouldn't be able to get a flat or a bedsit there and things like that. So I just needed, for me as well, to make sure that the hotels that I specifically talk about in the book are kind of different and have a different, bring something out in her, a different story for her, different way of being and the challenges that she faces in each one I think as well, as you were saying, when we pick her up, her confidence, but gradually we understand why she has to be like that. This isn't really an arrogance or a, you know, it's actually, if I don't do this and keep a hold of everything and don't rock the boat, I'm probably not going to survive. I mean, that's how serious it is for her.
And I read that you kept kind of notebooks with lists of the hotels, lists of the things she'd stolen, so that when you referred back to it in the book, you could make sure for your own sake that you were kind of keeping up with that continuity. Is that right?
Yeah, I made a list of the hotels, every hotel and where it was, because she left London at 17 and hasn't been back since. So this is the first time, and each hotel had to be far enough away for the times that she moved around. And also I wanted to keep track of when different things happened and which hotel and what time in her life. So I have that. And then I did start making lists as well of everything she took in each one of the hotels, but I got like as far as Hotel 11, I think, and I stopped because I was like, they are getting quite, especially if she's been somewhere for 7 months, it's a lot of tweezers, it's a lot of nail clippers and stuff. And I just thought, I'm not actually, because I thought the publishers had this idea that we might put in a list at the beginning of every chapter, but it was going to be repetitive. So instead I just picked a few key ones and sort of scattered them through the book at key changing moments when we go back to our childhood, and then we come back to the hotel. So just be one there.
So we've talked a little bit about your writing career and how the kind of the two differ. I was wondering, I mean, obviously part of the element of writing is literally just sitting down and doing the work, but is there anything else that you think that your kind of, was your writing routine very different to how you approach screenplays? I mean, did you sit there and write this novel over kind of a few weeks? What was the kind of general writing process like for you?
Well, it had to slot in with everything else that I was doing, because I write 9 to 5 and I break for lunch, or 10 to 6 or whatever I'm doing most days, as long as I can. That's my wish, that I can just do that every day. But sometimes you can't, as I'm sure you know. So the novel had to fit into that. So that it just came into my writing routine. So I try and write 50% paid work and 50% non-paid work. And this was at the time in non-paid work. So it was just part of that. So I was juggling that with TV pilot that I was writing with my screenwriting partner, and then I was doing my paid work as well. Yeah, so it was another project that I was writing, and it took me 9 months to get the first draft.
Mm. And did you have it all planned out, or was it something you just kind of wrote and then later on when you were editing you gave it a bit more of a structure, or did you already know kind of where the story was going?
Yeah, I had a rough idea. Like I said, she starts this job, she's very ordered, her life to her is perfect, and then there's a person or some people who challenge that, and this is her chance to change. So she could have walked, but this is a chance to change, because she's kind of waning a bit, you know, it's a crisis moment for her. So while I was writing it, and I think as well, probably even though I was saying the best thing about this is, you know, it isn't a screenplay and I'm in her head, I think my instincts were probably kicking in the whole time. Something has to happen now. So on like the first day in the Magnolia, and she's with Marley and the door's open and everything's going a bit funny. She's met Phil and the other girls, and she's the other women, and she's in the bathroom and she takes something she's never done before, and she's feeling reckless, because I knew her normal routine is to wait 2 weeks in a new place, get everyone on side before she ever takes anything. And this time, for some reason, she takes something, but I knew she had to, because for the story, what was I going to do for 2 weeks?
Yeah.
You know, it was, so it had to happen there and then. And it just meant that, but I knew that it would. So I knew that she was ready for that, and she was already off kilter a bit. Mm. And there was something about her. She was just, it's almost like she was ready for something big to happen, or a complaint to come in, and she had to leave.
Yeah, it's really interesting what you say about your kind of instinct as a storyteller already, and through your screenwriting. I guess you must have an idea of what makes a scene, and, you know, all the things we talk about in terms of things that a novel must have, in terms of, you know, an inciting incident, and then this must happen and this must happen. You must already know all those parts, and they're just instinctive for you now, because you've written so many scripts. It must just feed into your novel writing.
I think it probably does. And also I think about hooks, you know, I would naturally think, I'm coming to the end of a chapter, what's the hook? You
know, I think that's really helpful, because I think a lot of times some people who write are just thinking, you know, they will know what the story is, but they're not necessarily sure how to tell it. And I think sometimes, I mean, I know I'm guilty of it, of spending too much time describing something, or I'm not sure what's going to happen next, so I'm just kind of writing a filler moment. But you've got in your head, right, there needs to be a hook, there needs to be a moment of change, there needs to be this. I think that's really helpful to have in your head when you're writing.
Yeah, and it's also, it's not that I'm sticking to rules, it's that I want it for myself. Mm. I'm like, if I'm going to keep writing this at the energy and pace I need to write it at, in a frenzy, in excitement, I need to keep myself excited. So I need to, often, even if I'm not entirely sure how I'm going to get to the next part of the story, I will do something or write something that, you know, that adds tension. And I might not know how I'm going to pick it up, but I know that I need that there.
So I suppose you went into part of the novel writing process with your eyes open, because you knew what was expected in terms of, you know, killing your darlings and things like that. But now you are a published author, you've experienced everything from signing your book deal to the edits to a bit of publicity and things like that. Has anything about the experience been surprising to you, or have you had any experience that you found quite challenging? What's your kind of publishing experience been like so far?
Yeah, well, I think the publishers have handled it all very well. So nothing has been like I have to do this now. It's all been really great, with really great people around. So I really, I've never had so much support in my life as a writer, to be honest. So that was really, really nice. That was new for me. You know, they're kind of, you just felt really cared about. So that's a new thing for me, because, you know, in screenwriting it's just not like that. You are a professional, you do your job, and if you don't do your job, you get fired. I mean, it's that kind of simple, whereas this was like a nurturing, you know, and I was like, this is so nice, thinking to myself, you really don't have to worry, like, you can send me hard notes, I won't mind, you know. So that was actually really lovely. I thought that was nice. And I think for anyone who's never written before and they have a debut novel and they've got lovely, lovely people, just really enjoy that, because I think it's only in publishing that happens. The other thing that has surprised me is now that the book is published, I'm really happy it's out there. And that it's with readers and readers are reading it. So it was out with people, you know, who would get the proof and things like that. But this is now out with just general people. And that is really gives me a warm feeling. I'm so happy that the story is now available like that. And I thought I'd be terrified, actually. Oh, my God, the book's out there now. But actually, I'm just really pleased. That I can share it. It's kind of a sharing. I mean, that's all you want to do, really. I think any author, right? Anyone, screenwriter, novelist, you know, we want to share our stories.
So finally, and I know you have started work on your next book, so I was wondering if you could give us a little bit of a teaser about what it's about.
Okay, so it's not anything like the first book, although it definitely feels like the same author for sure. So it deals with some of the same, like, similar themes. It's psychological, but not in the sense that you feel like it's on the nose. It's just about being human and how people work. And there's also something really fascinates me is how we can never get to the truth about anything. We only have our perceptions and the way that we see the world and the stories that we make up in our heads about everything. I think that's why I enjoyed being first person so much as well, because it was really her viewpoint only, and, you know, it wasn't correct all the time, you know. So that really fascinates me, this idea about what is the truth, is it attainable? Yeah, so that, but sort of similar genre. In terms of, I haven't suddenly gone off and written a crime thriller or anything like that. I don't think I'd be allowed to.
So, have you kind of approached? You said you approached it in a similar way. So did you find that it was easy to kind of catch on to a new character and a new voice? Maybe not as easy as Noelle, but did you find that experience similar in some way?
Well, yeah, we were similar in the sense that I had to sit down, pick up a pen, because I work with pen and paper first, and just start writing. And that was really, I had a shaky pen. I was doing this. Now, I started writing this a year and a half ago. So I started writing it even before I got the book deal. So I just needed to know, I had this idea, I was really excited about it. I just needed to know, that I could write again, could write something again. And I was also worried that if I didn't do it soon, I might not do it. So there was kind of this this urgency, but I applied the same kind of thoughts to it, which was, I'm going to write this because I like it. I enjoy it. It excites me, and we'll see what happens. That's the way I thought I would do it, with trying to take off as much pressure from myself as possible. Mm. And now that I'm in draft, my first book is out and I'm in draft two edits now with the publisher, it's a very different feeling. Mm. There's a lot of pressure on, I feel the pressure, not from them, not from anyone. It's just the way it is, right? It's what people talk about. But I want to keep writing. So I have an idea for a third book that I want to write, and I'm just going to have to work through it somehow. And I'm going to have to get my headspace right, which is just do it. It's always just do it. Keep to the truth of who these characters are and what the idea is, stick to it, and just keep going. That's the only thing that I can tell myself, and try not to think about the first book. There's something about a screenwriter as well. You just don't know. Even if your screenplay is amazing, the likelihood of it getting made is still incredibly slim. So I'm now in this world where I've actually been published, and I just have to allow myself to write freely. If that makes any sense at all.
No, it does. It does. And I think that's a great attitude to have. And hopefully that will help you along with book two and book three and beyond. Senta, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Oh, thank you. It's been lovely talking to you, Chloe. Thanks.
That was Senta Rich talking about her commercial novel, Hotel 21, which is out now and available to buy. And if you'd like to support this podcast, debut authors and independent bookshops, you can now shop in the Confessions of a Debut Novelist bookshop, hosted by bookshop.org, which I've linked down below in the show notes. If you fancy buying any of the books you've heard on this podcast, then the majority of them can be found in this bookshop. And if you can, I would really appreciate you supporting me, supporting the authors and independent bookshops by buying them through this online store. Thank you so much for listening. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Or if you've subscribed already, it'd be great if you could leave me a review. See you next time.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.